So we're here on Daf Tezayin Amud Aleph in Masechet Erevin. But first, let's go over what we finished up yesterday on Tezvav Amud Beis. And if you recall, we had a machlokes between Rav Papa and Rav Huna about the case, or let's say for a general sense, about the principle called Parutz and Omed. So you have solid in this machitza, and you have parutz, you have airspace, open space. And the machlokas is, what happens if it's not Omed Meruba ala Parutz?
One second,
Well, thank you so much.
Nor
is it parutz Meruba ala Omed, but it's parutz ka Omed, Omed ka parutz. It's 50-50, it's exactly the same. So according to Rav Papa, the only problem is when it's parutz meruba. That's a posel. That invalidates the mechitza. If it's equal, then it's kosher v'yosher and it's a reliable, valid mechitza. Rav Huna, on the other hand, says, no, that you need ruba. You must have more omed than parts. And if you have 50-50, then it's invalid. So again, according to Rav Chisda, the problem is going to be if it's more parutz, and according to Rav Huna, the problem is going to be if it's not more omed. So Rav Chisda validates a mechitza that's half omed and half parutz, equal, 50-50, and Rav Huna says no, unless you have omed meruba, then it's possible. So now, the Gemara is analyzing various sources to see whether we can prove one shita or the other. So for example, we're going to bring a proof from Toshma. Let's see if we can pick this up. Okay, Toshma. So you know what? We'll go back to Tesvav Amud Beis, and let's count from the bottom, about 10 lines up. One, two, three, four, five, six, 7 lines up from the bottom. Toshma. Hamakara. Hamakore sukoso be shapudim obiaruchos hamita. So the man has a sukkah, and the schach of his sukkah fits into 2 categories. One category is called a kli, a utensil. And the Mishnah mentions 2 kinds of kelim that are made from strips of wood. And the rest of the schach is valid schach. That's not a keli. Now a keli, a utensil, is possible for schach because it's makabel tumah. And the Mishnah tells us at the beginning of Sukkah that Tzchach has to be something that's not Mekabel Tumah, which means it's not a Kli. Here he's got Tzchach that's made up, and we'll see what the percentage is, 50-50 or whatever it is, of Tzchach Posel, which means of a Kli, and Tzchach Kosher. Now what are these kinds of slats of wood that have the status of a Kli? So the Mishnah gives 2 examples. One is Shapudim, and the other is Aruchos Hamita. So let's start backwards. Aruchos Hamita, they used to have wood, and it served as a frame for a bed. They would put soft stuff on top of this frame and sleep on it. And what he did was, thinking, I guess for the sake of his sukkah, or maybe it was during the year and it wasn't for Sukkos, he wanted to have some covering over, you know, to protect him from the sun. And he took these slats of wood from the bed frame and he put them up on his roof, the roof of his hut. Now that bed frame has the status of a kli, it's a utensil. And therefore it's subject and susceptible to tumah, and ipso facto is disqualified for schach. The other option is shipudim. Shipudim means that when you have meat that's roasting on a bonfire, on a fireplace, you use a kind of a stick. I mean, we use usually something that's made out of metal, but you could also use something that's made out of wood as a spit, S-P-I-T. And that also is a kli, and it has a function. And now he puts those slats up on his roof. Okay, that is possible, but he has gaps between these slats of kelim, and in these gaps he puts kosher schach. So the question is, what's the status of his sukkah? So the Mishnah says the following. Im yesh revach beinehem kimoson. If the distance between one, we'll call it one, strip of wood from the bed or from the spit, the distance between one slat and another is equal to the size of the slats, which means that the kosher schach is exactly the same size as the non-kosher schach, is then schach kosher, kshera. Okay, I have a beautiful colored diagram here in the Masifta, and basically the way the colors turn out in this particular color, it looks like the schach kosher is gold in color. It means it's like a kind of light brown in color. And then he has black strips, and it's like one row after the other. So in this picture, what you'll see is that the size of the schach and the non-kosher schach is identical. Now, if this be the case, we have a clear-cut raya for Rav Chisda. I'm sorry, who was the first shita? Was Rav Papa? I'm sorry, I forget the names. It was Rav Papa, wasn't it? Yeah, I'm sorry. I said Rav Chisda, I meant Rav Papa. And a clear-cut refutation of the shita of Rav Huna. Why? Because the language of the Mishnah of kimoson, that word kimoson, indicates that it's equal. And they both have the same size, the kosher and non-kosher schach. Now, the non-kosher schach is basically parutz. It's like non-existent. It's like airspace. And I understand, according to Rav Papa, that we have now parts ka'omet, and that's kosher. So the mechitza here is a valid mechitza, and that's why he has to cover his schach with a mechitza. But if I hold like Rav Huna, I'm in deep trouble, because Rav Huna disqualifies parts ki'omet. And this is a case, kimoson, of parts ka'omet. The Ritva is very disturbed by this Gemara. He doesn't understand the analogy between schach that you need to qualify your sukkah and mechitzos. He says, "Ma'in your mechitzos eitzel schach? Hare sham midubar biofen shekol ha-sukkah mesuchseches el shemechitza min ha-schach kosher is mechitza kosher u-mechitza posel." He says, when you talk about two halves of mechitza, so then you can talk about parutz and omet. And if it's equal, then according to Rav Huna, it's posel. But here in the case of schach, Then you have schach. I mean, the question is whether schach is kosher or not kosher. So you have mechtz schach kosher, mechtz schach posel. So I don't know. He says I don't know if we should hold Rav Huna responsible for mechtz al mechtz being kosher in a case of schach of a sukkah. I mean, Rav Huna was talking about a mechitza. He wasn't talking about schach. I mean, the laws of schach are unique, specific laws of schach. I'll just read to you the Ritva's answer. He says, Tam shneim echad hu. He says that the underlying logic of parts ki omed and so forth and so on is equal both in the case of schach and in the case of mechitz. It's one svara, one logical principle. Because if parts ka'omed is possible, that's of hunashita, hatamhu, the reason for that is that the Torah says gidar ruba, you know, make sure that most of it is solid, is therefore we should apply that principle even to schach, that you need rov schach, just like in a case of mechitza, you need rov mechitza, which is called gidar meaning solid. So too, in the case of a schach, the purpose of which is to enclose the area under the schach, the Torah is telling you, you need rov schach. And that means that most of the schach has to be kosher. So the Gemara answers, Hocha b'may askinon, that the case in Sukkah is not the way you interpreted it, that the space between one, let's say one spit and another, right? One shiput and one and the next is exactly the same as the size of the shiput. That's not what the Mishnah means. There's a slightly larger or wider distance between one slat and another. When I use the word slat, I mean shiput, right? That's larger than the shiput. And that's called kishenichnas v'yotze. In other words, I'll read to you the Hebrew translation and then I'll explain it the way I understand it. He says, yesh makum bein shiput l'shiput kifi shir sheyachol shiput nosaf likanes v'lotzeis bereva klomar. So what I understand here, again, the language of the Hebrew beer here is a little bit difficult for me, and I don't know if I could push this into his language, but I think the idea is that if you want to put another shipud in the, let's call it the space right now between one and the other, one shiput and the other, you need a little bit extra leg room, you know, elbow room. Now, the actual space would be exactly the space I would need for another shiput. But the space that we're talking about is enough for me to actually place that shiput. How would I place that shiput? I would need to have a little bit of extra space in order to be niach, in order to place the schach between one shiput and another. So again, after I place the shiput down, enochinami, that airspace is equal to one, the space of a shiput. But in order to get the shiput there, I need a makom for hanocha. I need a little bit of extra space. Which really means that when the Mishnah is describing a situation that sounds like Kemosom 50-50, it's not really 50-50. It's 50.05 versus 49.05.5. Right? In other words, there's a little bit more kosher schach than there is non-kosher schach. Either Mishnah says Kemosom. Kemosom means that after you slip in that schach, it's going to be the exact same space as the shipud, which is the non-kosher schach, but in order to get in there, you might have to move it a little bit, you know, expand it a little bit. Now, if that's the pshat in the Gemara, we're going to have real trouble with the Gemara's next objection. The Gemara objects and says, "V'efshar litzamtzem." Now, if I understand, what he's saying is the following. That, you know why you leave yourself a little extra space between one shepherd and another? Because, you know, it's impossible for you to get schach kosher exactly the same size as the non-kosher schach. So we have to sort of give you a little bit of extra space for schach kosher. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. We have a principle called efshal litzamtzem, that a person could actually measure very precisely the space between one shiput and another, and he could end up with the size that's exactly equivalent to the shiput. So therefore, why do you assume that when the Mishnah says kimosam, it means nichnas v'yotze, allowing yourself a little extra space between one shiput and another? No. Efshal litzamtzem, a person could measure the exact space of a shipud and separate one shipud from the next with that space. So it seems that the Gemara did not exactly understand it the way I understood it, that you need extra space to sort of slip in your schach kosher. You know, you got to move the shipudim, one on the right, one on the left, a little bit open in order to get the schach kosher. No. That's not what it means, kishenichnas v'yotze. But kishenichnas v'yotze means that a person is not going to be able to measure precisely the size of the shiput and give a space that's exactly that size. Therefore, he's going to allow himself some extra room. And on that, the Gemara says, no, ha'efshal itzamtze. Omar Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami comes with another answer to interpret this Mishnah in Sukkah and defend the sheet of Rav Huna. B'madif. You're right. He could allow a precise measurement of space between one shiput and another based on the width of the shiput, and he could be very precise meduyak about it. But the Mishnah is talking about a different case, and that's called ma'adif. He did not take the time to actually measure it precisely. He wasn't interested in that. He just allowed himself room between one shiput and another. And he sort of estimated what would be the amount of space he would need between one shiput and another in order to put in schach kosher between one kli and another, one posel schach and the other. And the reason why in our Mishnah the shear of schach kosher is greater than that of schach posel is because since he didn't have the time or didn't want to put in the effort to exactly measure it out, he therefore stretched it a little bit, and the shear of the schach kosher is greater than that of the schach posel, and that's called omed meruv al haparetz. That's the answer of Rav Ami. Rav Amar, Rav wants to offer another answer, that the Mishnah is talking about a case where he left a space bitzimtzum, and he measured it out precisely, but im hayu nesunim erev nosno shasi nosno erev. What we're talking about now is not like the picture that we spoke about where there are separate rows of schach posel, and in between them are rows of schach kosher, but rather we're talking about a crisscross. Now, in weaving, we have a word called orev and a word called shasi. And I think we've discussed this in the past, that the shasi refers to the threads that go in this direction, from down to up. And the arev, or erev, refers to the threads that go from right to left. And what he does is, he puts the non-kosher schach in a situation of arev, and the kosher schach is going to go up and down. Like, instead of going from west, you know, west to east, it goes from north to south. That's called shasi. And that's where the kosher, or the reverse, it matters not. If he has the shasi made of non-kosher schach, then he puts the kosher schach of erev. Okay, fine. How does that answer the question that we're dealing with? How does that address and defend the shita of Rav Huna? There must be, according to Rava, a necessity in this scenario that he's describing to have schach kosher that's meruba on the schach posel, in order to defend Rav Huna. So why is it that when he crisscrosses shasi and arev, he knows for sure that he's going to get more of kosher schach than non-kosher schach? So the answer is a second diagram here, in which he shows you the possibility of shasi and arev when the, let's say, the shasi is posel, and the arev going from west to east is kosher. And what you'll see is that although he placed the schach posel in perfect lines, but nevertheless, when you go the opposite direction for the crisscross, right, which is called arev in this particular case, and that's made of kosher schach, then he's going to have more kosher schach than non-kosher schach. So I'll read to you the beer here. He says, "Imayo shipudim nisunim erev kagon shemunachim larochav asukim mizrach lamarav." So the first case of Rava is where the non-kosher schach is going as erev, meaning from west to east, is nosno. He takes the schach kosher shasi, which means he says meinicho ala shipudim li orech hasuka. Mitzafon l'dorom, and if it's going to be li'orech hasukah, then it's going to be the majority. Or shasi, let's say he puts the shipudim to the orech hasukah, then nosno, he puts the kosher schach erev, ubi ofen zeh schach kosher munach Rosho ha'echad ala shipud mikan, the rosho ha'sheni ala shipud mikan. So what he's saying is the following, that he starts his process in preparing the sukkah by putting down the shipud, right, the non-kosher schach. Then what he's going to do is he's going to use the kosher schach as a crisscross in the opposite direction. Again, it matters not which direction we're talking. It all depends on how he laid out the non-kosher schach, which he put out first. But once he uses the kosher schach as a crisscross from one side to the other, then what he's going to have is more schach kosher. And why is that? Because, again, he's crisscrossing it in a way that kind of he's weaving it. So it's going to be schach kosher on top of schach posel, right? Haschach kosher munach rosho ha'echad ala shipud v'rosho ha'sheni ala shipud. You follow? In other words, he's going to need to cover the shipud both at the point of starting from here and at the point of ending from there. He's going to need extra volume of kosher schach in order to go over the schach kosher, which now the schach kosher is going to be let down, so to speak, munach, is going to be placed on top of the schach posel, and in such a way he's going to end up with rope. Let me summarize this. He says the following. If the spits were placed crosswise, which is called arev, then he places the kosher schach lengthwise across the top of the spits. And if the spits were placed lengthwise, which is called shasi, then he places the valid schach crosswise across the top of the spits. So the valid schach is placed perpendicular to the spits, and it overlaps the spits. Now, if it overlaps the spits, then although the spaces between the spits are exactly as wide as the spits, but nevertheless the total volume of valid schach is greater than that of the total amount of invalid schach. And therefore we can apply the pinso bittel, meaning that the schach posel is bottel and the schach kosher. All this is based on the fact that he's going to have to overlap the schach posel. Once he overlaps the schach posel, he's going to have to put extra schach kosher. He writes in the note that when placed perpendicular to the spits, the schach must overlap them. Otherwise, the schach would fall to the ground. And because the larger amount of valid schach legally nullifies, that's why I said bittel, the smaller amount of invalid schach, therefore the sukkah is a kshera sukkah. All right.
The rabbi?
Yes.
Okay, so I understand, but so then it's not equal, because the valid
correct.
Schach... Correct,
and that's how we're going to defend Rabbi Yeshua, because, I'm sorry, Rav Huna, Rabbi Yeshua, because according to Rav Huna, if it's equal, the schach, the sukkah would be posel. The Mishnah says the sukkah is kosher. It's going to have to be that there's more kosher schach than non-kosher schach. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a long... a piece here based on Rabbi Hananel. In the note here, what I'm going to suggest is that we give it a shot, and we'll see if it goes. And he says the following: that everything that we said reflects the sheet of Rashi. However, there's another sheet here, and this is the sheet of Tosis built or predicated on the Rabbeinu Hananel. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, instead of reading the Gemara as Vaha Efshal Etzamtzim, we should read it as Vaha E Efshal Etzamtzim. And what was the Gemara's Kasha against the premise of Amud and Paritz and so forth and so forth, based on this Mishnah? How could the Mishnah in Sukkah validate the Sukkah? Because there's a Revach between the Shipudim that is equal to the size of the Shipudim, allowing for Kosher Schach. Hare I Efshal Amale Eskola Revach Shebein Shipud L'Shipud B'Tzimtzum Below Shehek Tzas Avir Beinayim. He says, when you put two slats, one next to the other, one is kosher and one is non-kosher, by definition, there's going to have to be a little minimum amount of airspace between them. And therefore, nimtza sheli olam haschach yeposel b'tziruf ha'avir merubal haschach ha'kosher. So if you add the airspace between one slat and another, one kosher slat and one non-kosher slat, to the non-kosher slat, you end up with rov non-kosher and miut kosher, right? The kosher slats are in the miut, in the minority, because you're going to have to add the airspace. And that's called the efshel etzamtzim. You can't just put two slats, one exactly next to the other. There's always going to be a little bit of airspace. And Rav Ami's answer was b'madif, which means shemosif u'meniach tzas chach kosher af ala shipudim. Right, he adds a little bit of extra kosher schach, which rests, which is placed down on top of the non-kosher schach, and in that way he definitely knocks out all the airspace, and by doing so, he now has a situation where there's no rov pasul, meaning rov pasul means 50% shipudim and another 0.001% of airspace. There is no airspace because the schach kosher is covering the schach pasul. Then we get to Rava. Rava says, even if he's not mad, if he doesn't fold over the schach kosher over the schach pasul, but rather, im hayu ashipudim unochim li orech shesi, yaniach haschach hakosher l'rochav orev olehepuch, ubofen ze bevada yistom es kol ha'avir shebein haschach hakosher l'posul. Right, that if he's going to lay down the schach kosher on top of the schach posul, he'll definitely knock out all the avir. Is bevada yistom kol ha'avir bein haschach hakosher l'posul, v'nim tzeshein ha'posul beruba al ha'kosher. All right, let's go on to Toshma. Now the Gemara wants to give offer a proof for Rav Huna. And based on a braisa that says the following, Shayara Shechonsa Bibika. Okay, so now we have the case of a caravan of people and they encamped in an open field. And they want to carry within that encampment. Hikifua bigmalim biukofos beavitin bishlifim bekunim bekolachos. So what did they, how did they, so to speak, hermetically seal the area around their encampment? They put up gmalim, which I guess these camels were tied down, and there were saddles. They piled up the saddles, and here we're on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Beis, and they had avitim. Again, I have a beautiful picture here of how it looks here. You know, you got camels around this whole camp, and you've got avitim or pillows. Now these pillows were used underneath the saddle because otherwise the camel would irritate its skin when the camel rider, you know, rode on the saddle. So cushioning between the saddle and the camel was avitim. Shlifim are all sorts of packages that they carried. And konim kolachos are kalche yirokos. Right, they used to chop off the stems or the roots of various vegetables, and apparently that took up a certain spot, is in all these cases, again, we're going to have to make sure that there's at least a 10 tefachim height here, but in any event, he's got a mechitza that surrounds this entire area, is there for metaltalim b'tocha. So within that circumscribed and enclosed area in the Biko, which is the wider open area, he's allowed to carry. Ubilvad, but what's the condition? Shaloyehe ben gamal gamal kimelo gamal. Right, that there shouldn't be a width between one camel and the other. That is the width of a camel. Ben ukaf luka kimelo ukaf. And from one saddle to another, there shouldn't be room for another saddle. Or bein ovid lovid kimlo ovid, right? Between one pillow and the next pillow, there shouldn't be room for another pillow. So basically, you've sealed off the area. So what do we see from this braisa? It's not enough that you have a mechitza that's omed kiparutz, let's say like Rav Papa, because if that would be the case, then who cares about the space between one gamal and the other of a rochav kashir, rochav gamal? It would be ksheris simply because he's got omed kiparutz. So he says here, "Hoisa mechitza kshera af bi ofen sheyesh revach ben gamal legamal kirochav gamal." Right? He's saying that we have to make sure. That's what the Brisa is telling us, that the space between the gamal and the gamal should not be equal to another gamal. Well, let's say it was equal to another gamal. According to Rav Papa, it would still be a kosher mechitza. Why? Because it would be parts ka'omet. This Mishnah is clearly, this price is clearly a raya for Rav Huna. Everybody follow that? I'll just repeat it one more time. The price's requirement here is make sure that there's not enough room for another gamal to fit in between one gamal and the next. If there's too much airspace, then it's possible. It's not a mechitza, and there'll be no heter tilta. Well, why not? So what if there's a space that's equal to that of a gamal, between one gamal and the next? I can space it out in that way. That would be parts ka'omei domi. And it's 50-50, it's equal. And Rav Papa says that that's a valid mechitza. So Gemara rejects it. Hochinami kishen nichnas viyotze. Klomer tzar shelo yehei bein gamal gamal kashir sheniten lahachnis lahotzi gamal berev biofen ze modem hakol shamachitza psulahi lefi sheyesh paritz meruba al ha'omed. In other words, if you have the amount of space where you could push in a gamal into that space between one gamal and the other, that would mean by definition it's paritz meruba al ha'omed. But enochinami, if the exact measurement of rochav hagamal would be the rochav of the space between one gamal and the other, then it would be omed kaparet stomi, and the mechitza would be kosher. I mean, we don't know that for sure, but that's a possibility in interpreting this price. And basically what we're saying is that if you want to get the gamal into this area, you're going to have to make room for the gamal. Make room for the camel. I wish I could see the picture is very, very good, really excellent. Somebody put a lot of work into this, but I don't see the saddles very well. Huh. Maybe if I had a magnifying glass. All right. Toshma. Another proof for Rav Huna and a kash on Rav Papa. Nimtzeis ata omer. Okay, this is a Tosefta Brisa from a Sechta Kilayim. And Shalosh Midos B'mechitzos. Okay, this Brisa is going to occupy our minds for a while. Now, when you're planting any kind of species of plants in close proximity to a vineyard, and you now might violate the Iser Kelayim, so you need to set up mechitzos between the Zroim, the plants, and the Gefanim, the vines. And if that be the case, then the Brisa, this Tosefton Kilayim, wants to set up the various restrictions and conditions for a mechitza that would allow you to plant Zroim and Gefanim on two sides of a mechitza. The Torah tells us, by way of background, that you are enjoined from planting two different species of plants of Zroim Yachtov together in the same spot. That's called Klai Zorim, the Zroim. The Torah also prohibited you from planting plants together with a vine or in close proximity to a vine, and that's called Kelaya Keren. However, if he plants them not, if he doesn't plant these Zroim in the Kerem itself, then it's permissible in one of two possible ways. One is that they should be separated one from the other by Shisha Tfachim. Okay, that's number one. Because the Shir of Yanika from which you nourish the ground is Shisha Tfachim. So beyond Shisha Tfachim there's no Yanika, and therefore they're not in any way, you know, swapping Yanika, Yanika meaning nourishment. The other possibility is to set up a Gader. Okay, this Gader apparently is going to serve as a Mechitza. And the advantage of the second method, namely a Gader, is that even if there is a Yanika one from the other, you know, the vines from the other plants, that doesn't bother me, because they weren't planted together. And why weren't they planted together? Because there's a mechitza in between. Okay. This brisa is now going to outline the scenarios in which the mechitza is kshera, and it will serve as a valid wedge separating the zroim from the gefen. And under what circumstances is it not suitable? And it would not permit planting the plants and next to the vineyard because it's not a mechitza. Okay. So let's see. There are three basic principles. Principle number one is kol shu pachos mishlosha is tzarech shelo yehei bein zeh lezeh shlosha kidei shelo yizdaker hagdi bevas rosh. And he's saying the following: if the mechitza is separating the plants from the vineyard in order to circumvent the Issur Kelayim, then number one, we need less than three tfach, meaning the mechitza. Let's say the mechitza was made from reeds. So we need that the width of each reed should be less than three tfach. And between each reed, we cannot allow for a space of three tfach. Just one second. Are these two different things, or they're the same? First, we're talking about the width of the reeds, and then we're talking about the space between one reed and another. So the width of the reed has got to be less than three tefachim. Not sure why. Okay, let's think about that. And the distance between one reed and another should not be three tefachim. What would happen if one reed was separated from another by three tefachim is Yizdaker Hagdi Bevas Rosho. We have to keep out the gedi, this little goat. And we can only do so if the distance, the airspace between one reed and another is less than three tefachim. If it's more than three tefachim, then the gedi is able to enter in this airspace. If there's not three tfachim distance between the kanim, then we could apply the principle of lavud and the mechitzas kshera. The only thing I don't understand here is why does the... Why does the mechitza, the slats of the mechitza, have to be less than three tefachim? If it's made of reeds?
They're just going through three different cases. That's why you got the three situations. If it's less than three, if it's three to four or greater.
Right, but what I'm asking, Steve, is what difference it make what the width of the kanim are? Now, you're using these kanim like as a mechitza, as a partition. Who cares if they're very wide?
Isn't there just a different principle involved as to what validates them?
And what is the principle? That if it's less than three tefachim, then I can only validate it as a mechitza if one reed next to the other is less than three tefachim. So what would happen if it was more than three tefachim? Let me just read the English translation here for a minute. He says the following. Okay. He says there are three categories of partitions. The first category is the solid sections of the partition are less than three tefachim wide. It is necessary that there should not be a gap of three tefachim between one section and the other. So that a gedi cannot leap headlong through the partition. Oh, now he adds a comment. Let's see. As long as the gaps are less than three tefachim wide, the partition is valid, even if the gaps are wider than the solid sections of the partition. No. That's not relevant. Let me just see. He has a footnote here, but it's very short. The fence prevents the unimpeded passage of a kid. That's like a double negative. Okay. And it's considered a valid partition. What difference does it make what the size of the section is? To use his terminology.
Rabbi, the way I understand it,
yeah,
is that each solid part, so each reed, right, if it's less than three tefachim, then the gap between each one has to be less than three tefachim. Okay. Even though the total amount of the gaps exceeds the total amount of the reeds. So now you're looking at each individual gap and each individual mechitza.
Oh, so wait a minute. Let me see if I can reformulate what you're saying in my words, and you tell me if this is what you're saying. If the reeds are more than three tefachim wide, right? That's not the case we're dealing with, but if it would have been so, then I don't care. It doesn't bother me. It would not invalidate the mechitza, even if the spaces are more than three tefachim. I guess that would depend. That would depend upon, you know, how. That would depend upon how much. How much more than three tefachim is the width of the reeds? Meaning, if let's say the reed is 3.1 tefachim in width, and from that reed to the next reed is also 3.1 tefachim, so then the mechitza according to Rav Papa, let's go according to Rav Huna for a minute. According to Rav Huna, you now have, it doesn't make any sense to me. I just don't get it. Obviously, the wider the reeds, the less I'm bothered by the space between one reed and another. I mean, that I understand. But why are you throwing out this magical number of three tefachim, meaning if it's three tefachim, we have to guarantee that the airspace between them is less than three tefachim. Okay, fine. And Rav Yeshua, I'm sorry, I keep calling Rav Yeshua, that was his father's name, but Rav Huna is very excited about that. Why? Because I have to guarantee that there'll be amud merubal aparts, right? So if I have a reed that's less than three tefachim, and I have a space between one reed and another of three tefachim, then by definition, you know, the best I could hope for, you know, is it can't be a kosher mechitza. But I'm asking the opposite. What happens if the reed is three tefachim in width? So what do you gain by that?
I'm making a suggestion. I think you're going too far. We're at least according to the language, we're just laying out three different scenarios, like Steve said. So the first scenario, regardless of which rabbi's opinion it is, we're not talking rabbi's opinions yet. We're just looking at the factual situation. So the first one is that each reed has to be less than if each reed is less than three tefachim, then the space between each reed has to be less than three tefachim, so that a kid can't theoretically go through it, right?
So, no, but doesn't that...
Which rabbi's opinion this is yet, I think...
No, but aren't you saying to me, if I'm reading the text correctly, that if the reeds are more than three tefachim, I don't care about the space between them. Isn't that what you're saying to me? Again,
I
the word tzarech, what does tzarech mean? Tzarech means that if you want to validate a mechitza, this is what you need. These are the conditions that have to be met. That's what the word tzarech means, unless I'm misunderstanding the word tzarech. And he's saying that tzarech shelo yeh ben zeh lezeh shlosha, it's critical that there shouldn't be airspace between one reed and another of three tefachim or more. And he's saying that why? Because it's kol shu pachas mishlosha. Because the width of the reed is less than three. Why do I tell you, tzarech, you must guarantee me that the space between one reed and another is less than three tefachim? That's because your reed itself is less than three tefachim. Isn't that the same as telling me that if your reed was more than three tefachim, I couldn't care less how much the space is between one reed and another?
Maybe. I don't know.
That doesn't make a bit of sense. Well, what's the magic here of getting a reed that's more than three tefachim? I got to know what the airspace is. Well, whether you hold like Rav Huna or Rav Papa, I'm not interested in that. I'm not going into the different shitas. But I'm just saying that the Mishnah seems to say, under what circumstances do I need to guarantee that the space, the gap, is less than three tefachim? That's because the width of the reed was less than three tefachim. And I'm asking you, supposing the reed is 50 tefachim, I couldn't care less. I still have to guarantee that the space is whatever it might be. You know, in other words, the space between one reed and another is going to be relative to the size of the reed, the width of the reed. That's according to everybody. So why are you telling me that, you know, that there's some sort of shear of three tefachim? I don't chap it. He doesn't give me any clue here. I looked in both my translations here, and I'm missing something. Do you see the word tzarech? Tzarech. That's the word I'm focusing on. All right, let's go on to the second category.
Lavu doesn't apply here.
Say it again.
Lavu doesn't apply here.
Lavu
less than three.
Right, we might apply lovehood here. Let's see if you apply lovehood.
Even though the space is larger than the reeds, because it's less than three, it's lovehood, so it makes it a kosher mechitza.
Again, just, Steve, do me a favor if you can. Flip it around the other way. Supposing the width is more than three tefachim, so what?
So if the width is more than three tefachim, and the space is even bigger than that, then Lavu doesn't apply.
Okay, so why do you tell me that I need Lavud, right, I need Lavud to make sure that the gap is less than three tefachim? Why? Because of the size of the reeds. Well, what difference does it make what the size of the reeds are? I got to know whether or not I have Lavud. Do I have a gap of three tefachim or less than three tefachim? What has that got to do with the size of the reeds? That's what I don't catch. So let's say you...
Because if the size of the reed is 1 and the gap is 2.9, we can still apply Lavud even though it's Paritz Merubah.
You might be right. But again, what happens if the reed is 3 tefachim wide? Tell me that. You started very well. You know, what happens if the reed is 3 tefachim wide?
Well, that's the maximum that we can have. If it's 3 and the gap is 3, then, you know, they're equal spaces and we've got a kosher mechitza. But as long as the... anything up to 3 and the gap is at most 3, then we can always have a kosher mechitza because of Lavu.
Again, again, Steve, just explain to me why Lavu is dependent upon the width of the reed. Lavu is the space between one reed and another. Has nothing to do with the width of the... of the reed.
Right.
So why does it say that? It says like this: if the reed is less than three tefachim, then I got to worry about Lavud, and I have to guarantee that the gap is less than three tefachim, implying that the halacha would change if the reed was wider. Why would the halacha change if it was wider? I still have my strictures of Lavud, and if I need Lavud, I need Lavud. You know.
So I'm going to say all the cases are talking about where the space is bigger than the reeds. We're talking about always cases where the space is bigger than the amount of the reed.
The width of the reed.
And if that's the case, the only time we can apply Lavud is up to 3 tefachim.
Again, the space is what? Is equal to, what did you say? Say it one more time.
It's always equal or larger than the reeds. So if that's the case, we can only talk about Lavud applying if it's up to the 3 tefachim for the size of the reed.
Because what? Say it again. Because if the reed is 3 tefachim, then what? Can you knock it into me? Say it again.
Right,
if the reed is 3 tefachim,
then the space between the reeds that moves could be 3 tefachim.
The space could be what? It could be more than 3 tefachim or what? If this, again, what changes if the, if just to somehow knock that into me, what changes
right
when the reed is 3 tefachim wide? What exactly changes now?
Well, we're still talking about how big the space can be compared to the amount of the reed. And I think we're talking about cases where the space is always greater than the width of the reed. And if that's the case, we've got these different situations.
So again, if the space is greater than that of the reed, my reed is 3 tefachim wide, and now the space is greater
right
than 3 tefachim, I have a serious problem here. So why is he telling me that, you know why I need to guarantee that the space is less than 3 tefachim? That's because the width of the reed is less than 3 tefachim. I'm going to tell you that even if the width of the reed is more than 3 tefachim, I couldn't care how wide it is, I have to guarantee that there's not too much of a space between one reed and the other, which means that the gap can't be more than 3 tefachim. It's got to be less than 3 tefachim to apply love. All right, I'm going to apologize because I made another appointment here, you know, we're throwing things from one rishus to another, so I got to do that. All right, then. So I wish everyone a great day.